Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, CBS's Will Brinson joins me to break down the divisional round of the playoffs, a four-game preview. But first, I wanted to tell you about another ESPN podcast, and that is in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions. They present Kyle Brandt's Basement, led by NFL Network's Good Morning Football host, Kyle Brandt. This Sunday through Thursday show explores the ins and outs of the NFL through lively guest interviews, including Bills quarterback Josh Allen, every Tuesday. That's Kyle Brandt's Basement. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. All right, joining me now here as promised on the Bill Barnwell Show, a frequent contributor to the podcast, a good friend of mine, an excellent podcaster on football, a golf DFS wizard, as you can see from his various his shows, if you watch that on his Twitter, on YouTube as well. It is our friend from CBS, Will Brinson. Will, like we said before we got on, good set of games there for the divisional round.
Great set of games, Bill. And thank you. I saw you liked my tweet of when we did me and I don't want to talk about this nonsense, but me and Link Calhoun and my buddy Will Newman did we were like, you know, we just want to talk golf. So we fired up a golf stream ahead of the American Express, which is a silly nonsense tournament to talk about. And we talked for 2.5 hours, which is checked out.
What's going to happen with the Super Bowl, given that there is the Waste Management Open and the Super Bowl happening the same week in Phoenix? How are you going to handle that?
You know, it actually happened the last time the Super Bowl was in Phoenix, too. It just happened to be the same weekend. I think the bigger question, how does Jim Nantz handle it? Well, I guess he doesn't have to deal with the Super Bowl because it's on Fox. But I'm actually flying out of Phoenix back home on Saturday, so I won't be going to the game. I think I've reached that level of tenure now. Yep. Like, you're just not going to the game. Yep.
That's what I do.
I know. I'm fine with it. But I was kind of hoping to go to the Waste Management on Saturday. Mm. I have heard, however, that, I mean, one, it's like 30 minutes away from downtown Phoenix, at least, maybe an hour. And two, you know, it's a bunch of sloppy, drunk college frat kids, which, you know, I mean, not my scene by any stretch.
Maybe not anymore. But yeah. I mean, as a golf DFS expert, I feel like you have the clout to go there and just demand things.
Well, it is a CBS tournament.
There you go. Even better.
Yeah, I think we're going to try and go. It's probably not going to happen. It's just too much work, I think, you know, because you got to fly out early. Anyway, the games, you don't want to talk about my golf habit.
We have good games.
We have really good games this week. And it is a little surprising because they're great games, but the spreads are all pretty high.
Yes.
Relative to divisional rounds.
Yes. I know multiple Bills fans who have communicated to me that they are extremely worried that the spread for that game is 5.5 because they think they're a worse team than the Cincinnati Bengals. And to be fair, they might be right. Mm. Let's start with that one.
Sure.
Your instinct makes me feel like you are optimistic about the Bills in this first contest. Is that fair to say?
I think I'm actually now a Bengals fan who's pessimistic about the Bengals' chances. You know, the Jonah Williams injury, you know, he's not Anthony Munoz, as Pete Prisco pointed out on the podcast today, but it is a pretty significant injury. They're down 3 offensive linemen. You know, the Bills are a really well-coached team. They have a good defense, although not a great defense. You can run on them most of the year, and the pass rush, particularly now with Von Miller gone, obviously, has been a little lacking in teeth.
Yep.
Which is, you know, you've got to get after Joe Burrow. I sort of wonder, Bill, I think it's really interesting how the DeMar Hamlin thing has kind of changed the way that we view Zach Taylor as a coach. Mm-hmm. Like, even, you know, John Breach, lifelong Bengals fan, dad kicked for the Bengals. You know, he hadn't been all in on Zach Taylor. And I think over the last, you know, couple of weeks, it's like everybody, you know, the way that he handled it, the leadership he showed in Buffalo in that spot, I think, I mean, and I don't know if it's fair or not, it just changed the perception of him as a coach. You know, it helps that the Bengals are good. I largely believe that Joe Burrow is kind of dragging him along with this, with Cincinnati.
Not unfair.
Yeah. And I think my biggest thing with this matchup is that I just don't want to bet against Joe Burrow when the chips are down. And he might not be the number one guy you would take if you were doing a redraft. I understand you'd probably go Mahomes and then Allen.
I thought you were going to say Purdy or Daniel Jones too.
Daniel Jones. Yeah. Yeah. Are you, how excited are you? Well, we can talk about you giving.
We'll talk about Daniel Jones. Trust me.
David Gettleman's redemption tour. Right.
Right.
I mean, like, I don't think it's insane to suggest you could take Burrow one, just because I know that, like, physically he's not the guy that Allen and Mahomes are, but my goodness gracious, boy, when it's time to close, he's the coldest killer in football, I think.
It feels like he has that cigar ready and he's just like, I gotta do what it's gonna take to get me to that cigar, and whatever it's gonna take, I'm gonna get there. I mean, I don't think that's unwarranted, but at the same time, I guess let's start there, because this is a Bengals offense that just came off two straight against the Ravens, and they did not do all that much on offense in both those games. Like, they were fine, but they score 17 points in the wild card game. They get the defensive touchdown, the 98-yard return to swing that game in their favor. But the Ravens did slow Joe Burrow and this Bengals offense down. So from seeing those games, especially the wild card game, do you think there was anything that concerned you or anything the Bills could take away? Like, do you think it's just losing multiple offensive linemen is going to put a ceiling on what they can do? Or do you think that's just a bad matchup for the Ravens and they're going to be, you know, a much more effective offense here against the Bills?
I think a little bit of both. One, I mean, it is a bad matchup. The Ravens defense, you know, is noted all over the place, right? Once they traded for Roquan Smith, who they paid a lot of money for too, in that big contract, you know, once they traded for Roquan Smith, it dramatically changed who they were on defense. And they were, I mean, a much, much better team after that trade. Roquan Smith is an all pro player. It shouldn't be that shocking. You know, we can haggle about whether or not, you know, we want to give that kind of cash to an off ball linebacker, but you know, when you trade, you know, we trade what they traded for him, and you know his contract situation. You know, you sort of go into it expecting to give that deal out. He made the defense substantially better. And I think that showed up against Cincinnati. You're also, you know, talking about even if the second time was with primarily backups, you are talking about the third time, you know, a divisional matchup. Sure. The only action, obviously, that the Bengals got against the Bills, or that the Bills were able to see it against the Bengals, were those first few plays before the scary Hamlin incident. And to me, and this sort of goes back to what I mentioned with Zach Taylor, is like, I am very curious to see down these offensive linemen, how he handles this approach offensively, because I think there's one of two ways you could do it, right? You could say, all right, you know what? We're down these offensive linemen. We do not want Joe Burrow under siege from these young pass rushers of Buffalo. We are going to pound the football. That seems obvious, but also kind of counterintuitive, because when you lose offensive linemen, they are also, as we know, in charge of run blocking.
Yes.
And to me, the way to attack this would be to do what the Bengals started to do when they came out against Buffalo. And that was let Joe Burrow cook. And he get the ball out quickly, let Tyler Boyd eat up underneath. You know, you're going to get these one, you know, I mean, I don't know if they'll double cover. Like, if they double cover Jamar Chase, you just, you know, you attack with T. Higgins. And I just think I'm just curious. That to me is the crux of how this game will swing, because if the Bengals are trying to run the ball, I think Buffalo can score on them, get them down, and force them into like a negative game script where Joe Burrow will have to drop back and into deeper drops. If they can be aggressive with the short passing game and really, you know, get Buffalo on their heels, this could probably turn into a shootout. But I think that would probably, I think that behooves the Bengals the most to me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. In terms of that first game, obviously only three drives, one and a half really for the Bengals, one for the Bills. Both teams moved the ball effectively. Bengals scored a touchdown, Burrow was like 4 or 4 for 60 yards and had a long PI to Jamar Chase against Tre'Davious White. Do you think that was instructive and meaningful? Like, do you think that makes you feel more confident it's going to be that kind of game in the rematch, or is it just, you know, 2.5 drives doesn't mean that much?
No, I think I do think that makes me a little more confident, because it was very clear to me. And, you know, by the way, I don't want to, you know, obviously the situation with Damar Hamlin, you know, now it's of course a little bit easier to talk about it now that he's you know, improving and not, you know, nothing really, really bad happened. But the Bengals, and I do wonder how much of this will factor in too. The Bengals got really hosed by the NFL. And I don't think it's being talked about enough. They were in a situation where the game, they handled the Damar Hamlin injury with class, with a great deal of sportsmanship. They deferred to the Bills. They wanted to make sure that, you know, and of course they were shook up too. You're on the field. But because that game is not played, the NFL decided to allow the Bills, who have less wins than the Chiefs, play on a neutral site field if they met in the AFC Championship game. Meanwhile, the Bengals were in a situation where if they lost the Ravens in week 18, mm-hmm. they were going to have a coin flip to figure out if they were playing in Baltimore or Cincinnati. And they were denied the opportunity to try and host this game in Cincinnati by virtue of beating Buffalo in the regular season. And so it's very surprising to me that they didn't, you know, like it's the same situation as Kansas City and Buffalo. I don't really understand why they wouldn't apply the exact same rules to Cincinnati that they applied to Buffalo and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I think the Bengals are pretty ticked off about it. I mean, we've heard reports about that. I think the Bengals players, I think the Bengals fans are ticked off about it. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw, at least in those first two drives, that Joe Burrow, just the way that he looked, sort of just coming out aggressively throwing, you know, putting the ball in exactly where he needed it to be. He understood the gravity of that game in that moment on Monday Night Football, final game of week 17. We can get the 2 seed, maybe get the 1 seed. I think you see that same urgency in that same game plan. I would hope that that's instructive, and I would guess that Buffalo probably thinks it is too.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that Joe Mixon was fined $13,000 for his coin flip celebration?
Get out of town.
He was.
13, Are you kidding me?
13,261 fined for the coin flip celebration.
By the way, my bold, we did bold predictions pod, and my bold prediction for this game was that T. Higgins would score a touchdown and lift up his shirt and have a DeMar Hamlin 3 jersey on underneath. And then I want to see what the NFL does. I hope somebody does it. I want to see what the NFL handles that, because you can't find them.
That, of course, that was my favorite. Like, I loved when, do you remember years ago, I think it was the first Seahawks Super Bowl, where Marshawn Lynch was wearing gold shoes and there was a threat of like, oh, if he wears gold shoes out, he's not going to be able to play. I was like,
Of course, yeah.
The solution is just have the entire team come out wearing gold shoes. They're going to kick the entire team out of the game. I don't think so.
No, of course not. Didn't Ocho Cinco try and do that too?
I believe so. I believe he had shoes that were not appropriate, and the NFL was.
I remember sitting in that. That was the last one in Arizona too. The Marshawn mm-hmm. gold shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember sitting in the press box in Arizona with binoculars, focusing on Marshawn Lynch's feet.
That's just your thing, Will. I mean, I don't want to bring that up on the podcast, but that's just
a cleat guy.
That's nothing wrong with that. On the Bills side, Josh Allen is going through some stuff. Josh Allen, last game, hit some incredible throws, absolutely otherworldly passes, and made some bad plays. Some throws into tight windows, took a strip sack for a touchdown, and he was hot coming off a blitz. I feel like he is playing hero ball. And I know that some Bills fans are frustrated. They think the scheme is not necessarily where it needs to be, and maybe that's not, but I do think there are options that he's sort of passing up underneath to try and hit those shots downfield. And I felt like the Dolphins were really feeding into that. Like, they were rushing 6 and 7 20% of the time. They were saying, hey, we're going to take away the scrambling lanes from you. We're going to give you one-on-one shots downfield, hit them or throw incomplete, but we're going to take our shot and create more of a higher risk, higher reward situation and kind of feed into that hero ball mentality. So from your perspective, Will, can the Bills win this game, I should start with, and win the Super Bowl with Josh Allen playing this way, where he's turning the ball over a little more often, but hitting a bunch of big plays? Or do you think he has to change the way he's been playing over the past really couple months for them to win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, great question. And I think that the answer, you know, to hedge here, they can win the Super Bowl with that type of play, but the variance and the line that you have to walk, like the path is a lot thinner when you're playing that sort of hero ball, because you are shooting for the moon, realizing that what could end up happening is, you know, you're turning the ball over. It felt like, you know, the Bills got up 17-0 against the Dolphins, and I mean, I was like, all right, I need to bet more Bills, like Bills live. They're going to run away with this thing. And then that hero ball stuff kicked in, and he's like running around, like holding the ball, like he's peak Shady McCoy, you know, like a very loose bread basket. He's one handing it, fumbling forward and trying to stuff it into tight windows. I sort of wonder if I don't think this is a designed approach by Buffalo. Is it, Bill? To me, it has to be Josh Allen is just kind of pressing a little bit. I think you look around, especially if you're in the AFC, and you're like, if we get through Cincinnati and Kansas City, like we, you know, the Eagles and the 49ers, all these teams are good. Mm-hmm. The Giants are good too. Not to downplay them, but it's like, you feel like if you win the AFC, I mean, you're going to be a fairly heavy favorite in the Super Bowl. I just sort of wonder if like Josh Allen is, you know, people ask Joe Burrow, like, you know, what's the window for you to win the Super Bowl? It's my whole career. I sort of wonder if Josh Allen and the Bills might be pressing a little bit more than some of the other teams that we have in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Certainly feels that way. We were going to get the Chiefs Jaguars in a second, but the Jaguars fans are going to get mad at me. Just wait. We're going to talk about the Jaguars winning the game in a second. But if the Chiefs win their game, if you're Andy Reid, if you're Patrick Mahomes, would you rather play the Bills in the AFC Championship game, or would you rather play Cincinnati Bengals? Because remember, Bills game, neutral field, Bengals game at Arrowhead, but Bengals game, team that's beaten you three times over the past 2 years.
Mm. Yeah, it's like the Bills can't – I'm trying to think what the 1990s NBA comp is for this, because like, it's like the, you know, the Chiefs are the bad boy Pistons, right, and Josh Allen's MJ. Yeah. Who are the Bengals, like the Reggie Miller's Pacers? I don't know. It's not them. I don't know who, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know who it is. It's crazy, right, that the Chiefs have just kind of, not that they figured out the Bengals, excuse me, they haven't figured out the Chiefs, but you know, Lou Anarumo, the Bengals defensive coordinator, has done a tremendous job in terms of how he's approached Patrick Mahomes, especially with these halftime adjustments. And Joe Burrow, that's the other thing too about this Bills Bengals game, and if, you know, if the Bengals win and the Bengals Chiefs, is like, I think Joe Burrow takes it personally that he's not put in the same stratosphere as Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes when people are talking about the elite AFC quarterbacks. Now, you know, Mahomes has a Super Bowl, but you know, Burrow's been to one and Allen hasn't. I think he take, you know, it's the old MJ meme, like, and I took that personally. That's where Joe Burrow is. So I think you'd rather see the Bills. I don't know. That's it. I think you'd rather see the Bengals because it's at home and they have that banged up offensive line and you know you can beat them. It just hasn't gone your way the last three times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my answer is Bengals, but I think the Bengals are going full of confidence that they can win an Arrowhead again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, who do you think wins this game?
Sometimes, Bill, in this business, you have to
get the hedge.
No, you sometimes just gotta you make a pick and you sort of get this feeling in the pit of your stomach that you're just wrong and the team you want to win is going to lose and you just go with the pick anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to go with the Bengals to win.
Ooh.
Outright. The line movement, it's climbed up to 5.5, as you mentioned, certainly concerning. The offensive line issues are absolutely terrifying. But I think, you know, if there's a matchup that you can maybe get through with what they've got in terms of those offensive line problems, it's, you know, if they come out and do what we're saying they should do, which is what they started to do against the Bills the first time, and let Joe Burrow cook in short yardage, and let that defense, you know, kind of get after Josh Allen, and he plays a little hero ball and makes some mistakes, I think the Bengals could go into Buffalo and win this game. And again, I think they'll have a chip on their shoulder. I'll take the Bengals to win. A little nervous about it.
Yeah, I would be too. I just picture DeMar Hamlin coming out before the game and the Bills returning the opening kickoff for a touchdown again, and then you just feel like you've lit your money on fire.
Yes, so, especially when it's my buddy Nyheim Hines from NC State doing it.
There you go. Disrespectful, if anything, for Nyheim Hines to do that to you, knowing you picked the Bengals, but maybe disrespectful that you picked the Bengals over your friend Nyheim Hines and the Buffalo Bills.
It's fair, Bill. Fair. Who do you have?
I have the Bills, but it's only because I picked Bills Niners to win the Super Bowl or to play in the Super Bowl for the season.
Ooh.
And so I have to stick with that, even as it gets more and more dangerous for me to do so.
I'll pour one out here because it's not going to happen now that the, Lamar Jackson didn't play. So my prediction of the first ever all bird Super Bowl between the Ravens and the Eagles is now, the dream is officially dead after Joe Burrow took, Sam Hubbard technically took care of business against the.
Well, you didn't pick the Chargers. So that's progress.
Thank you, Bill. That's true. People, I've been like doing like a couple like radio hits or like TV shows, and people are like, you know, as one of the foremost experts in chargering, what do you think about that Jaguars game? I'm like, I'm glad that my reputation precedes me. That's fantastic. That everyone knows that I'm a Chargers honk who just let the kept missing the football, like you know, Lucy and Charlie Brown year after year.
Well, we're going to have our support network at the Super Bowl, so that'll be nice.
Yeah, that's right. We do. It's I mean, wait, it's you, me, Greg Rosenthal, Mina Kimes, and Mark Kessler, I feel like.
Yeah, pretty much.
The primary suckers who keep in the Chargers.
Yeah, we're going to light a candle. We'll remark on Chargerings of old.
We should go have like a half empty cocktail somewhere whenever they hire their new offensive coordinator, whoever it is.
You know it's going to be disappointing, whoever it is. It's going to be
terribly disappointing.
We will see. Well, how many teams need offensive coordinators now? 10?
Yeah, with Byron Leftwich and Greg Roman resigned.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Resigned. Well, 10. There's got to be 10 good offensive coordinators out there. I don't think any teams will have trouble.
Oh yeah, I mean it's easy to find. Yeah, especially when like Daryl Bevel's declining to interview for the Washington team and the Jets. It's like you know your situation is tough when the passing game coordinator for the Dolphins is declining to interview for your offensive coordinator job. Like
you know what this means?
Yeah,
Adam Gase, he's out there. Yeah. Someone there's 10 seats open. He's that 10th person.
Peyton Manning will give him a glowing recommendation.
His wife will not, unfortunately. His Ooh. Wife leave. Oh, well, he's just right. He's See, the he one who had that story.
No, he's, yeah. Remember he left Thanksgiving. He left the hospital.
He left the hospital after his child was born. It's like, we're good here. Okay. And then he beat Peyton Manning to the facility for practice.
Did we joke about that? Or did he say we're good here? Right. Like, or did he, I feel like he actually said that.
I believe the actual quote is we're good here.
We're good here. Good. Cool. All right. See you later. And then he had the one against the game. It was when he was with the Jets, I think, or maybe against the, they were against the Bengals before they drafted Burrow. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I skipped Thanksgiving dinner to prep for this game and put this game plan together. And they scored like 4 points. The terrible Bengals team.
He was, I believe in the same article, I think it was an Athletic article, if I'm not mistaken, about Adam Gase. He said when he was head coach of the Dolphins, he would just order a pepperoni pizza for dinner every night, which, I mean, I'm not going to say I would not that personally, but it doesn't seem like it's conducive to family life. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way you want to do it. I'm gonna see if I can find this really quick. Oh, where is it? Pete? Pete Prisco. I mean, this is good. You know, if he hears that I did this and talked about this, he's gonna kill me. But that, I don't care. I'm gonna read this really quickly. This is from 2017 when Case was with the Dolphins.
Okay.
This is Pete's coach rankings. In fact, we goaded Pete into ranking all the coaches at the owners meetings. We were like, "You won't do it. You won't do it with him here. You only do it when you're hit, like hiding at your house." He's like, "I'll do it right now. I'll do it tonight." Wrote the article. Adam Gase was eighth in the NFL.
Wow,
he is a star in the making. Gase took over the Dolphins last season and got a team hardly stacked with talent to 10-6 on the rails. He has great give and take with his players, knowing when to push and when to pull back. He's also a great offensive mind, which you need in this league today. One more thing. He is a maniac when it comes to working, which can be seen in his preparation. A few years from now, he might top this list when Belichick retires if he can keep it going forward.
I mean, I remember Dolphins fans being very mad at me for suggesting that Adam Gase was not a genius after that first season when they had like a negative point differential.
The most obvious all-back regression team.
Yeah, and then they signed everyone from that roster to extensions, and they're like, oh, this is great. We're bringing the boys back. And it turned out the boys were actually not that good. That was the Jay Cutler season.
Yeah, God, what a, I mean, just calling, getting Cutler's like, hey, listen, Fox, I appreciate it, but
I'm good.
$10 million, I get to go and play a year with my
boys. I mean, he didn't go back. I was talking about that yesterday with somebody. Jay Cutler had that Fox deal and then signed a one-year, $10 million contract to go play for the Dolphins. Was terrible, or was bad. I don't know about terrible. He was bad.
He was about what you would think a mid-30s quarterback coming out of the Fox C booth to
pitch a Dolphins team. The other thing is, like, you think about the quarterbacks who are staying in, like, you know, who are like really focused on football, who you feel like, oh, yeah, this is a guy who is absolutely living and breathing football every single day. Jay Cutler?
If you were ranking them, Cutler would certainly be in the bottom quartile.
In terms of guys who you're like, okay, if they're coming out of retirement, they're going to be ready to go the next day. Does not feel like Jay Cutler is that guy. Maybe he is. I don't know. I don't know Jay Cutler personally.
I kind of love Jay Cutler, honestly, though.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah. I like the whole ethos of Jay Cutler. I don't know if like you've heard the story about him, like maybe it's an urban legend or an urban myth, but him and like the, he's like at the bar bathroom. He's like standing in there at the urinal, and he's, you know, using the bathroom. And some guy's like in the urinal next to him. He's like, Jay, oh my God, Jay Cutler, baby, Jay Cutler. And Jay like tilts his head back and goes, don't care. I don't care if it's not true. I want it. I will believe that it's true. I'll go to my grave believing it's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway. Totally understand. Let's talk about the Chiefs and the Jags. And I promised earlier that after disparaging the Jags by suggesting the Chiefs would have a preference without even playing this Jaguars game first, let's talk about this from the Jags perspective. Jaguars lost 27-17 to the Chiefs in Week 10. A late touchdown got them within 10. Was a comfortable victory for Kansas City. So, Will, if we're sitting here Monday morning, and we're talking about how the Jaguars upset the Kansas City Chiefs, the number one seed in the AFC, what's the most likely way it happens?
Oh, man. By the way, shout out to my aunt and uncle, Susan and Rick Broder, going from Jacksonville to Kansas City for this game.
Wow.
Dedication. Hashtag Duval. Hope you guys get some good barbecue and enjoy the time. I have a sneaking suspicion that the barbecue will be better than the football, but that's just me. I just think, Bill, that, one, you know, the grasshopper has to overcome the sensei, right? Doug Peterson's got to outcoach Andy Reid.
Right.
That's not easy for a former backup quarterback and former OC. I went on my bold prediction for this game was that the that Andy Reid will run the Philly special on Doug Peterson, which is just like epic troll levels if he did that. I think essentially the Jaguars have to play a perfect game. Mm-hmm. And you have to force Patrick Mahomes into, I don't know if you have to force him into making turnovers. You have to do, and I don't know what the answer for this is, because I don't think there's a really clear-cut answer, but you essentially have to prevent him from constantly converting all those third and medium, third and longs that he just finds a way to get done when he gets out of the pocket, whether it's with his legs or whether it's, you know, with those, you know, these ridiculous arm slot throws. Mm-hmm. You have to do that, and you have to not turn the ball over 5 times in the first half. That will go a long way too, I think.
I mean, that's a good start. Certainly avoiding 5 takeaways in the first half is a great way to help your chances of winning. But we did see it, and the Jaguars had to play a perfect half in the second half of that game, and they pretty much did. I can't think of maybe that one unnecessary roughness call that was nonsense was maybe the one not perfect thing they did, but they were pretty dang good after halftime, or, you know, on that final drive of the first half, and then after halftime to come back and win that game in regulation. Didn't even need overtime to overcome that lead. And I think one of the other things that comes to mind for me that maybe is a little scary is that, you know, Doug Peterson, man, he's going to go for it. Like, he is going to be aggressive. He is going to know, hey, I'm the underdog. We have to play like underdogs. Whereas Andy Reid, I mean, I know he had that moment in the Super Bowl a few years ago where they were aggressive on fourth down and ended up helping them win the game. But I do kind of feel like he's been conservative in those situations this year. Maybe he won't be in the postseason, but it just sort of feels like if it comes down to a close fourth down decision or game management or clock management, I kind of trust Doug Peterson more than I trust Andy Reid.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, we saw Andy Reid do that too against the Browns a few years ago with Chad Henne. Remember that fourth and they lined up, the Browns are beating the Steelers, and the Chiefs lined
up Chad Tyreek.
Yeah. And just hit him. Oh, that's right. Hit him on the quick hitter. Yeah. So I agree. I think that is a really fascinating point to this, because Doug Peterson, I mean, he is as aggressive as they come, and he knows that he is going to have to be hyper aggressive against a Chiefs team that is simply better than the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. You cannot, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be, and this is where it gets weird too, Bill, because it's like, you know, what if you get a fourth and one on your own 35? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can think, all right, we got to go for it. We got to extend these possessions. We've got to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do, you want to score points yourself, of course. And you do that by holding the football. At the same time, it's like, you know, that could, you have two fourth downs that go south for you. Mm-hmm. Early on in the game, and it's like you're just down 21-0 all of a sudden.
Right. That's the other side of this, though, is that I feel like when you're the Chargers, yeah, I could see you getting out to a 27-0 lead and then blowing it by playing terrible football. I don't think the Chiefs are going to make that same mistake if they get out to an early lead. But another question I have for you, Will. I went back and looked. 8 of their last 10 postseason games, the Kansas City Chiefs, they've trailed. in the first half, sometimes by more than two touchdowns in the first half. And one of the games they didn't trail in the first half was that game against the Bengals that they ended up losing in the second half of the game, where they did have that happen to them. So is there any reason you can think of that comes to mind that makes you feel like it justifies why the Chiefs seem to get out to slow starts in these playoff games? Is it just random chance? Is it something about Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes? Like, why are they always playing from behind in the first quarter?
I don't know. I really don't. It's, and we've seen it repeatedly. It's not like the Chiefs don't, and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes don't know how to script the opening plays well. I mean, this is a team right. that, you know, has a lead offense. I wonder if it's almost maybe a sort of like a boxing analogy where your strategy is to sort of feel out your opponent instead of being the aggressor and coming in and trying to take some swings early on. Mm-hmm. That's kind of all I've got. I don't know the answer to it, but they have been slow starters. You know, maybe part of it too is that, you know, when you're Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and you know you can come back from anything, does it change your mindset a little, knowing that, you know, you're like, not that you're like not trying harder early on, but you're maybe less intensely focused at the start of the game because you know that you are so proficient at coming back in these spots.
You don't feel alive until you're down 10-0.
Yeah. Look, I know both of those like answers are stupid,
there's a reason I asked you the question. I don't have.
I know. I don't think there's like a rational reason for it, because we've seen them plenty of times in the regular season just come out guns blazing.
Okay.
This will be, by the way, not nothing. I mean, this is the first playoff game for some of these, you know, Juju's played in the playoffs, I believe, right, with the Steelers. Yeah,
but not Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, no Kadarius Toney. His first playoff game. Marcus Davis-Scantling's played in, you know, I mean, there's not Tyreek Hill out there. I mean, this is just a thought there that, you know, maybe Mahomes takes a deep shot and drop, you know, you get one of those Christian Watson or first drops, you know, style mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, the Tyreek Hill would have housed and all of a sudden, you know, the Jaguars turn around, get a touchdown and you can get a weird environment in there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, weird mix. You have that Chiefs history getting behind early. You also have the Andy Reid bye week phenomenon. Andy Reid with 10 days or more of rest, 30-6. As an NFL head coach, Will, is the Andy Reid bye week phenomenon a real thing or just randomness?
Oh, it's a real thing. I mean, you're talking about a highly prepared NFL head coach mm-hmm. who's won a Super Bowl. I think it's fair to say one of the best offensive minds of the last 30 years, 25 years, whatever you want to call it. He is just an elite offensive mind, and I think that his preparation and what he can do offensively and schematically with some of the stuff, especially in the red zone, you know, whether the ring around the rosy thing, right, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this is a team that just has it's a line from, you know, the line from the original, the best Batman. Like, where does he get these wonderful toys? You know, that's Mahomes and Reid. I mean, it's like this guy's just got a belt and a Batmobile loaded with options. So I think that having that extra time to prepare. You didn't know until the last minute because when the Jaguars won, but you knew you were either playing the Jags or did they know that? Or was that Saturday?
I believe that's Saturday.
But they knew if the Bills won that they would be playing I can't keep up with the time anymore.
They could fairly assume, given that the Dolphins and Ravens were playing backup quarterbacks, that they were going to be playing the Jags once the
correct.
Jags won.
That was what I was trying to get to, is that they knew that they were either going to be playing the Chargers, who they played mm-hmm. two times already this year and are intimately familiar with, or they're going to be playing Doug Peterson and the Jacksonville Jaguars, who they also already played once and beat. And you know, you know all this history, right, with Doug Peterson. So I think like the fact that he got this extra week mm-hmm. with two teams, you don't dive in on prep for the, you know, the Jaguars until they actually win, but you have to assume that Andy Reid spent a large portion of his prep time expecting to see one of these two defenses and one of these two offenses. And so I think that is a pretty massive edge for them.
Yeah, and they're both teams that the Chiefs already played this year. If it was going to be the 4 or 5 team, 5 seeds, which it can't hurt either, because you already have some prep from, you know, the prior game. You kind of know, okay, this worked, this didn't work, this is what we can play off of. You know, that doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the number one seed is so coveted. You know, yeah, you get the absolutely. Bye, you get an extra week of prep. You know, you get an extra week of rest, and you're given that extra week of prep and rest to the best coach and the best, I think right now, the best coach in football and the best quarterback in football.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Are you picking the Chiefs here?
Yes, I think the Chiefs will actually win by more than 9 points.
Wow. Okay. 10-plus point victory for and the Chiefs.
If one were inclined, actually, no, I can just say this, right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I don't have to like dance around. Yeah. No. If there's a really obvious and good teaser out there.
Ooh.
You get the Chiefs down to 2.5 and you get the Eagles down to 1.5.
Ooh, the Wong teaser from Old Wong Brinson. Teaser,
right through those key numbers, Bill. You will see a lot of people if either one of those teams are if the Chiefs win, because then the Eagles and Giants will be on Sunday, right? And the Giants are winning, it's gonna be like, you're gonna see Giants are killing everyone's teasers from like 400 gambling like people on Twitter.
Some of us had Buccaneers +8.5 with the teaser on Monday night, Will. And
Tom Brady did it at 30.
Turns out the key number for that game was 24.5, not 3-7, unfortunately. I agree. I think the Jaguars are competitive. I think they throw the ball pretty well. But I do think the Chiefs pull this out. This is the worst tight end defense in football by QBR against Travis Kelce. So keep that in mind as you think about this matchup. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. But don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
NFC, Cowboys, Niners. Let's start with Dak. Dak had been struggling with takeaways for 2 months, and then he has, by QBR, the second best game by any quarterback all season.
Wow.
And the blowout victory over the Bucks. If I asked you what the number one game was, you could get 50 guesses, and I don't think you would get it.
Okay, now I just want one guess.
One guess.
Best by QBR?
Best by QBR, which I will.
I know. It includes rushing. You didn't want to say that because you were going to worry it would give it away that it was Daniel Jones.
That is a hint.
Is it Daniel Jones? Probably not.
You have one guess. I'm not going to give you multiple guesses.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, gosh. Didn't somebody quarterback run for 100 yards?
Justin Fields ran for 100 yards more than once.
Okay. I will guess Daniel Jones did it. I don't know which game I'm guessing, but I'll just blindly guess that because I think that would be funny.
Well, the answer is Daniel Jones.
Yes.
What? Daniel Jones, week 17 against the Colts.
Why didn't I say week 17? What a dummy.
Only a couple weeks ago.
Oh, man. Now I'm mad because there's no way. I really should not have gotten that.
Not huge numbers. Remember, it's a per-play basis, but Daniel Jones, 19 of 24 for 177, 2 touchdowns, 11 carries for 91 yards and 2 touchdowns. So 4 scores, ran the ball effectively, very efficient as a passer. Competition, admittedly, not that great. But overall, even after you adjust for the competition, Daniel Jones, the number one performance of 2022. But then Dak, right behind him.
Unbelievable.
With a dominant performance against the Bucs. So given that he had been struggling, given what you saw against the Buccaneers, where do you stand right now on Dak and this Cowboys offense? How much faith do you have in them as they go to play one of the toughest defenses, if not the toughest defense in football, in the San Francisco 49ers?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard not to, I don't want to write off the Cowboys. I think it's easy to make our Mike McCarthy in the playoff jokes. You'll get very conservative.
Sorry. I just have to erase 5 or 6 questions here.
Okay. I mean, what's hilarious is that, he had that, the fourth down where they're up, they're up 18. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he 100% kicks that ball to go 21. Brett Maher had like shanked 5 or 4 extra points already. Yes. And instead, he runs a play to CeeDee Lamb for the touchdown. And I was like, oh my God, Mike McCarthy turned a corner. Breach was like, dude, Brett Maher can't make it.
Thanks for that kicker.
Brett Maher is having an emotional crisis in front of America right now.
Right. It's like having stuck on the range, you're just shaking ball after ball, yes, ball in front of a live national television. Mm-hmm. I do sort of wonder if that does it force his hand to be a little more aggressive, though.
It should. I mean, the Cowboys did bring in, I think it was Tristan Vizcaino to compete with Maher this week. I don't think, to me, it's like, even if you think he's going to be fine, I think once you have that hesitation in your head of, we don't know that we can trust him, it might make you more aggressive, but I think it also means that you have to change your kicker. I just think, you're just putting yourself in such a vulnerable position that you feel like your offense is kind of compromised. And I think, I don't think Mike McCarthy sees aggressiveness as a virtue. So I don't think, for his perspective, he would see it as oh, this is a good opportunity for me to be a better coach. I think he sees it as, oh no, we're going to have limited options.
He's like, oh crap.
And I think that's a big difference. And so I'm inclined to think that they should be more aggressive. And I think if they do have Maher out there, they will be. But I almost feel like once you decide it's not Maher, then you should be going to Vizcaino or somebody else.
Yeah. And the other thing too is I don't think it's going to happen. I think Mike McCarthy's job is probably safe, but if you trot out Maher and you miss, misses 4 extra points in a field goal or misses 2 field goals and an extra point, mm-hmm, and you lose by, 5 points, you're going to get roasted by everybody.
Of course.
And Jerry Jones is going to hear it and he's going to see it. And Sean Payton is out there making as much noise as humanly possible about every job on the planet, even though we all know you're not taking him, Sean.
You don't think he's going to be the Texans coach?
I don't think he's going to take the Panthers job, Bill. I don't think that's in the cards. And then David Tepper gives him $25 million and says, go do whatever you want to get a quarterback. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Okay. If you were David Tepper, number one, congratulations. Number two, wouldn't you do that?
Yeah. You wrote, I've said this to people all the time. You wrote about it for Grantland way back in the day, Bill. Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
It's like a legal salary cap circumvention to pay a coach as much as you there's no cap. You can pay a coach as much as you want. Offer Sean Payton $30 million a year. What do you care? You're printing money as the owner of the Panthers.
Yes.
All you want to do is win. And this guy, and people are saying, he's not worth that. People are dude, Sean Payton's one of the best. He would immediately be a top 5 coach in the NFL.
I mean, look what happened to the Saints this year.
Yeah.
It's not even a question to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer. If I was a terrible football team that needed a head coach, I would simply offer Sean Payton so much money that he didn't have a choice but to accept the job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you already snuck out from under this disastrous Matt Rhule contract because you got 7-year deal from Nebraska. Just take the
it's a free roll.
Take the mulligan and go pay Sean Payton $50 million a year.
Million. Just hand him a blank check and say, whatever you want, we're going to do that.
You figure out the trade to Mickey Loomis.
Yes.
You figure out whatever you want to do with Scott Fitterer. You hire him, fire him, make him the head of vending. We don't care. And then do whatever you want to find a quarterback. Your quarterback, you pick. You want to take a 9th? Go for it. You want to trade for Aaron Rodgers? Knock yourself out. Do whatever you want. You're in charge here. Make it happen. Give me some wins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, back to Dak.
Yeah. Any bizarre tangents, you can obviously just pull them off on me.
Yes, that's fine. But Dak, do you feel like you're good? You feel like we're going to get a you know, the normal or your expectations for Dak are relatively normal heading into this game? Do you think they're better than you would be for a typical Dak game because of how he played last week? Or do you think it's kind of the broader sample says he's kind of been struggling?
I think that the expectations for Dak, generally speaking, will be a lot higher than they probably should be based solely on how he performed in Tampa Bay. And Tampa was just awful, dreadful. Dallas was fantastic on offense. They were
They fired almost literally their entire coaching staff after the game.
Yes, that's true, except for the head coach. By the way, I thought it's sort of, and you know, sometimes I'm guilty of this too, but it's like, you know, when I pick the Bucs, I bet on the Bucs. You know, you sort of, you know, talk yourself in. You're like, well, Dallas won that game. Like, there's no, well, if this had happened and this had happened, I mean, Dallas kicked their ass, right? But having said that, the Dallas receivers made a ton of really big catches, like in really big spots where not that they can't do it because they're very talented, but I don't know that it's like a replicable thing from like over the entirety of like a postseason. So if they don't make some of those catches, you get some drops, you know, you get just the catches are a little off and like they just held on to these balls and that where it's like, it just felt like more than usual for a team. Now, if they play like that against San Francisco, can they win? Absolutely. But San Francisco defense is much, much better than Tampa Bay's. And the biggest injury that is sort of flying under the radar right now, Jason Peters, not at practice on Thursday. That makes it kind of a long shot. He's got to get back to practice on Friday if he's going to play, I would guess. And if he doesn't play, that really changes things for this team in terms of protection with a very nasty pass rush from San Francisco.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even if Peters does play, number one, he is less than 100%. Number two, he's 41 years old. And number three, last week was the first time all season he was playing left tackle. This is a line that is very much in flux from week to week. And even though the names are impressive, I don't know that they're getting the most out of those names relative to what you might think. Like Tyron Smith is a Hall of Fame tackle.
Yeah.
He's playing right tackle right now. He allowed 1.5 sacks in 4 games to end the season. He's not, to me, the Tyron Smith you think of when you close your eyes and think, oh, that's that dude at left tackle. He's not that guy right now. So.
And by the way, I can attest, 41 didn't feel good.
I mean,
feels fine.
Last year he was okay with the Bears. I think he had one really bad game that kind of got memed a lot, but wasn't like he was sitting there at 40 and everyone's saying, oh, he's Andrew Whitworth, you know, like he's still playing at a super high level. It was like, oh, he was a free agent beginning of the year because there wasn't really a big market for his services. Like I think this could be a mismatch for the 49ers defensive line. And I think that's when we've seen Dak struggle is when the offensive line has not been able to hold up.
And if that is the case, and I think you're spot on with that's a possibility. If that is the case, I think Dallas defense is good too. Dan Quinn, by the way, Dan Quinn, Kyle Shanahan revenge game here, sort of, you know, if you're into such narratives,
That's true.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, they blame each other for not winning the Super Bowl. I think you will see the 49ers score. I think there's going to be points in this game, a lot of points. I'm taking the over as one of my best bets. But like, if the Niners do what you're saying and get pressure on Dak early, and if they score, it is going to lead to a massive amount of Dak passing attempts in less than optimal situations. Again, you go back to, you know, we're talking about with Burrow and the Bills. You know, it's called offense for a reason. You know, you want to be on the offensive when you are. You don't want to be trying to come back and being forced to drop back every single time with the 49ers pinning their ears back. I think if that becomes the case, then the Niners could really turn this into an ugly game.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the guy on the other side of the field, Brock Purdy, the cop-out answer is to say, well, he's playing well, but it's also a product of the offense. I don't want to do a cop-out answer on this show, Will. I want to know what you actually think. Like, you know where I'm getting.
Yeah, is Brock Purdy good?
Is Brock Purdy actually good, or is it strictly a product of the people around him and the head coach making the play calls?
I think it is always disingenuous when people refer to somebody as a system quarterback,
sure,
because every quarterback is in a system. Like, that's
true.
The whole point. You are in an offensive system, like designed. And what we've seen over years and years of covering the NFL and just watching football is that a lot of times a talented quarterback can go somewhere and not thrive because the system around him isn't, you know, doesn't fit to what his characteristics and strengths and weaknesses are. And that's what Kyle Shanahan does really well, is he caters to the strengths of his quarterback. Now, I think what people are missing is that Brock Purdy, much like Jimmy Garoppolo, may not be Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. He's not a physical freak, but he makes good decisions, and he makes those decisions really quickly. And that's what you need to be in a Kyle Shanahan offense. Like, of course, you'd rather have, you know, the athletic traits of Trey Lance operating with the mind of Jimmy G or Brock Purdy. You haven't seen that to be the case, right? But if you don't, and you go back and think about what we've seen from Kyle Shanahan offenses, Matt freaking Schaub led the league in passing yards with the Houston Texans in a Kyle Shanahan offense. Brian Hoyer and the Cleveland Browns were in first place in like week 10 of the AFC North, like the Browns, like unheard of for the Browns, until Alex Mack broke his leg. All these pieces work in cohesion together. Are they loaded around Brock Purdy? Of course they are. They have George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, and Chris McCaffrey, like three of the biggest unicorns in football at their respective positions, and they're all on the same roster. Like, and that's not even mentioning Brandon Ayuk, who is a true number one wide receiver, or at least the caliber of it. But Purdy, you're not trying to be some superhero who just dominates. You were trying to be a point guard and a distributor. And people can get mad that the ball is, you know, given to Chris McCaffrey or Deebo Samuel at the line of scrimmage, or that guys are running wide open. But Brock Purdy's still making the decisions in the moment, and he's reacting quickly, and he's doing it in a smart and efficient way. And I think, is the offense beneficial for quarterbacks? Hell yeah, it is. But you have to be like, you have to make the good decisions, and you have to make them quickly. And Brock Purdy does that. His processing speed is really good. And that's why the Niners are still winning games.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I think that's totally fair.
So he's good. I think he's good.
I think this is a game where, given how good the Cowboys pass rush is, I feel like if he plays the same way in this game, we can't keep asking this question. Like,
yeah,
it's been six starts. He's been good in every single one of them. Often very good, better than Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance were in the same offense, which raises a whole other set of issues.
And by the way, look, he was shaky at first again in that first playoff game against Seattle. Like, he was.
He had a couple of throws where it was a little iffy.
Mr. Around, but yeah, I mean, like, but he's like, the first like couple of series, he's like, oh, here comes the rookie game. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, of course he's nervous. He's Mr. Irrelevant playing in the playoffs. Like,
right. And there'll probably be moments in this Cowboys game.
That was like the most impressive thing, is how well he settled down, Bill. Mm-hmm. And he got in the groove, and he's got this. I mean, a 41-year-old man should not be using this phrase, but I'm going to do it. Like, he has a confident swagger about him.
A Joe Burrow-esque confident swagger, perhaps. One more question on this game. We'll finish up with the Giants-Eagles game. Most likely to impact this game, Nick Bosa or Micah Parsons?
I think most likely to impact it is Nick Bosa. I think the biggest impact would be Micah Parsons in terms of shifting the game. But I'm picking the Niners to win the game and to cover. I think it'll be a shootout. Dallas will score some points late if they have to. But if Dallas wants to win, the answer needs to be Micah Parsons. I think the answer will be Nick Bosa.
I agree. Giants Eagles. Let's have the Daniel Jones conversation.
Congratulations, Bill.
I don't know. I don't know.
Got a franchise quarterback.
Seems like we do the past month, but Daniel Jones doesn't throw the ball very often. He is the shortest average pass distance of anybody in football. And I will say this. Like, I think Daniel Jones is playing very well. The like general excitement about the Giants is, you know, they're better than expected. Over the second half of the season, they were 2-5-1. Their wins were over the Commanders and the Colts. Sorry, the Texans as well. They were 3-5-1 over their bye. The Texans, the Colts, and the Commanders were the three victories, tied the Commanders as well. So not exactly the stiffest slate of opposing teams they beat. And then, yes, they beat the Vikings on the road in the wild card round. But the Vikings, by DVOA, were worse than the Broncos this season. They were the sixth worst team in football.
Is that right? I didn't see the final DVOA. Oh my god.
That is correct. So like I'm gonna say the Giants have reasons to be happy with how they've performed. I think there are reasons to be optimistic about the future. I don't know that this is a team playing especially great football right now. even though they did just win a playoff game.
All right, Bill, I've been saying this for the past few weeks, maybe even like the months. I don't think I've talked to you about this, and I'm curious what you think about it. My theory is that the 2022 Giants are basically the second coming of the 2017 Buffalo Bills.
I have mentioned that before, and I liked it, but the Bills lost their first playoff game, and the Giants won it.
But the Vikings might be the 2017 Bills, too.
That is the other part of
it. The problem. It's the Spider-Man meme, but with the 2017. Kirk Cousins is Nathan Peterman, and I guess Daniel Jones is Tyrod Taylor. Yeah, the playoff win, and look, like I was banging the table for that too, and then it was like, oh wait, the Giants. I mean, the Vikings might be that team too, and it's, you know, this 11-0 one score team. I mean, you know how many times have we talked about, you know, one score games? How many times have you written about it? It's like it's gonna come back to bite you at some point, and it did in the playoffs. The point being is, I think that a large section of Giants fans. are saying, like, I mean, I've heard people say this, like, feels like 2011 all over again. It's like, does it?
I mean,
I didn't really feel like 2011.
The only difference is I had no faith in the team either, but I had no faith in those teams for different reasons than the little faith I have in this Giants team.
Yeah, I mean, right. And like, it just, I mean, look, there are really, the pass rush is really intriguing for the Giants. I think, and my point about the 2017 Bills, by the way, is that if I'm a Giants fan, I am ecstatic about the future for this franchise. Joe Shane looks like he knows what he's doing from a talent acquisition perspective. Brian Daboll is, I mean, very clearly a good, an objectively good NFL head coach. And you have those two guys in lockstep. They came from Buffalo. They know how to build a program. You know, they know how to build around. They saw Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean build this infrastructure and then drop Josh Allen into it. You know, they made Daniel Jones play well. And so the future is really bright. I think, by the way, Dexter Lawrence, holy crap. I'm so glad. Yeah. I mean, I hate the Dave. I mean, I had that pick nailed to the T. I knew Dave Gettleman was going to take him with that second first round pick. It was so obvious. He's a quintessential Dave Gettleman pick. I had it from like my first mock draft to my last mock draft, never flinched. And he took him. Dexter Lawrence is from like 20 minutes north of where I live. He is probably one of like the two best prospects to ever come out of the state of North Carolina. And I'm thrilled for him that he is living up to his immense talent and what he did at Clemson. Cause it is hard to do it from that position, especially when you're justifying that pick in the draft. Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be awesome. I think that this team can be a bit of a pain for the Eagles, but at the same time, I don't think this is a great matchup for them. If Jalen Hurts is healthy, they should be able to get downhill on the Giants. And then you really force Daniel Jones with a skill position group that has played better than we thought they would, but is not like elite by any stretch of the imagination. You really can put them into a spot where you're asking Daniel Jones to throw a ton, and it just could get ugly, ugly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like the Giants' chances if this is a game where Daniel Jones has to throw 40 or 45 times. It just does not seem like the best case scenario for them. But Eagles' defense, certainly their strength right now, it feels like the numbers for them keeping quarterbacks from scrambling, not very good, which could be a concern. But then from the Eagles' side of things on offense, I think the concern is Jalen Hurts, who ran the ball on a designed run once in that week 18 victory over the Giants backups, to be clear, not the Giants starters. Are you concerned, or what is your level of concern that the Jalen Hurts we see, who steps on the field in the divisional round game, is more like the Jalen Hurts from week 18 versus the Jalen Hurts who was an MVP candidate before that shoulder injury?
I think that if we see week 18 Jalen Hurts, it means that the Eagles are winning by 20 points. If it is a close game in the second half, I anticipate that they will, I think they'll use some of it early on. You got to be careful too, because it's, you know, Jalen Hurts. I mean, my gosh, he is, it was a scout or GM. Somebody told Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports before draft. He said that, and he said, look, I'm not saying this in a pejorative way. He's like, Jalen Hurts is the best running back in the Big 12. He is a physical beast. Like, I would not want to tackle Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. but you know, he doesn't run like Russell Wilson, right? He's not getting down. He's trying to run through you. And that's what I'm curious to see. How early would the, I think that's still no. How early will the Eagles implement him in that physical run game? Because, or do they believe that they can win in a quote unquote traditional way, you know, less Jalen Hurts designed runs like they did in week 18, you know, they've had the bye now. So he's got an extra week just to get a little bit healthier. I would guess that they are going to try and win, you know, quote unquote, more traditionally. And if they can get a lead, you know, then you just feed Miles Sanders, Boston Scott in that run game. You try and preserve, because Brady Quinn told me that there's really nothing you can do. You know, you just have to let the shoulder heal. And so it's really time. And, you know, once you get past this game, you don't get any more time until, you know, the week off before the Super Bowl. So I would guess that they're going to try and limit his number of design runs, the amount of contact he takes on the shoulder. But if it gets to the second half and the game is close, I would not be surprised at all if they started to kind of crank those up and he just powers through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that is definitely a possibility for the Eagles. I guess let me ask you this. Like, is there any chance the Giants can win if Hurts is 100%?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I mean, yeah, of course there is. I mean, like, look, Dable's a great coach. You know, yeah, I mean, there is a path to it. It's just like that offense, when Hurts is 100% and able to do what they do creatively in the run game, that physical style where, you know, you're doing the read options and it's just, there's so much to defend. And as good as Don Martindale is, like, I don't know that the Giants necessarily have the personnel to lock down that run game and also, you know, stay true on the back end with AJ Brown just beasting on people.
Okay, so Giants are 7.5-point underdogs as we record this podcast. Let's say you knew for sure that Jalen Hurts was the guy from week 18 where he's only going to have one design run. He's not going to be a focal point of the running game. What would you set the line at between these two teams?
Oh, I think it would shrink down to like 6.
So only a point and a half.
Well, I mean, like, he's not
a key number, but
yeah. I mean, I think again, like, this is, by the way, this is the other side of the teaser leg. Like, you make the Eagles one. I mean, it's that's what kind of scares me, is like every single person on the planet is going to have that teaser. Like, it's called a teaser for a reason. Like, But I mean, like, do we think that was week 18 Jalen Hurts, like, really? I didn't feel like he was, like, necessarily.
He was fine as a passer.
Yeah, exactly. And like, we saw games this year, like the Steelers notably, they loaded up to stop the run and they just bombed to AJ Brown down the field. So yeah, like, I wouldn't move the line that much, even if he's the guy who's not running a ton, because this is still a team with a very good offensive line, a very good traditional run game if they want to use it. Devontae Smith has had a really nice year. I think it sort of flew under the radar because of AJ Brown's performance. Dallas Goedert back. This is the health, the weapons that they have in that passing game are really lethal. So as long as he's healthy enough to throw the way that he's thrown all year, yeah, I don't think I'd move the line a whole ton.
You have Eagles and Niners, Chiefs and Bengals.
I'm
not mistaken.
All chalk, yes.
Well, Bengals are not chalk.
Oh yeah, that's right. The Bengals are upset. There we go.
I'm all chalk. I have Bills instead of Bengals, but one of these teams is going to get upset. I don't know which, but we'll be back next week trying to explain why it happened. Will, until then, where can people check out your coverage of the NFL?
Pick Six Podcast, the daily for the rest of time, every day. Just kidding. I don't want to say that. My bosses hate me for doing it. we do a daily show every day on YouTube and, of course, in podcast form. Check me out on Twitter and Instagram at Will Brinson. And I think maybe I'll start writing a little bit more on CBSSports.com. Mm. Well, not a whole lot of content to consume over there. It's been a long year.
Return to writing for Will Brinson. We will see.
We'll see.
Get off my turf, Will. That's all I have.
We were literally doing a podcast.
That's fair.
It's all I have in life is this writing. That's this podcast.
And also a podcast.
And all my weekly appearances on Sports Center with Scott Van
Pelt. Well, season's ending, buddy.
That's true.
The season ends, they put me in a closet until September.
I'll tell you what, nothing wrong. Somebody can throw me in a closet until September. I'll be happy. Just make sure it's down on the beach or near a golf course.
Or near a golf course where Will Brinson will be winning money from someone, presumably. But until then, Will, it's always a blast having you on. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Thanks, bud.
All right. Thanks so much to my buddy Will Brinson from CBS. Hope you guys enjoyed this divisional round preview. We'll be back next week, either recapping the divisional round or previewing the conference championship. Not sure which yet, but hope you guys are enjoying the postseason, and we'll have more football analysis here on the Bill Barnwell Show